Welcome to the Wedding Project Podcast. I'm your host, JD Kellner. I know it's been a long time, but I'll tell you what, having a new kid will make that a little bit, you know, of a challenge. I now have two boys, very proud of them, very proud of my wife, Eden. She's been a fantastic mom. Mom and new baby are doing well. Big brother is also doing well. He's enjoying having little Jude in the house. The jealousy hasn't started yet, I will tell you that, but they absolutely, the two of them, make it a challenge. So I'm really excited. I'm excited papa, we'll put it that way. And I'm going to roll that right into my first segment. You're wondering, where could you take this after you're talking about your kids? Well, because we're going to be hitting the vaccination schedules for Jude here soon. There's been a lot of reports in the news about measles outbreaks, something that hasn't really been in the United States as a substantial threat since, I believe, the year 2000. And for whatever reason, you know, and a lot of people have different thoughts as to why this is occurring. Is it illegal immigration? Is it anti-vaxxers? Is it just laziness? Doesn't really matter what the reason is. But the problem is this disease is making a comeback. And for a lot of people, it won't ever be a fatal disease. But measles, there are different strains of measles. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a pathologist. So I'm not going to pretend I know exactly what I'm talking about here. Just what I've read and through some research. You know, it does have the ability to hospitalize children. It has the ability to cause miscarriages, those types of things. And they're part of the MMR vaccination schedule, and I know people get worried about, oh, well, I read that you can, you know, there's a chance you get autism. No, that report's very much been unfounded, and, you know, decades of scientific evidence suggest otherwise. I've had all my vaccinations, and, you know, I have problems, but, you know, being autistic is not one of them. No one really knows the cause of that, and I'm not going to hang my hat on vaccinations, you know. So if you decided that it was all vaccinations, flu or whatever, you know, the mortality rate for flu in children is a lot higher than measles. You know, I don't really want to get on a soapbox here, but I'm just alarmed. And I think anybody with you really young infants, when they see this news, gets really alarmed. You know, we were actually debating about going to Florida, but considering the measles rate is active, there's, you know, some miniature outbreaks out there, we're just not comfortable. Or getting on a plane, for that matter, with other people we don't know anything about. There's just a lot of things behind it that scare me, and they should scare you for the people around you who are stupid anti-vaxxers. I'm going to call you dumb. You're dumb. There's not really another way to put it. You're putting your eggs in a basket that has long since been defunct, right? I do have some interesting statistics in front of me, but I'm going to continue to tell you how stupid you are if you don't get your kids vaccinated. And I understand the schedule may be not what you think it should be, and perhaps you could convince your pediatric doctor to extend out that schedule, but you should still get your kids vaccinated. There's no reason not to. If you look at yourself, most people who have been vaccinated, that, you know, you're fine, right? People whose parents didn't vaccinate them, there goes into that, this is my family's tradition lineup, and unfortunately you're still here. That's not really a good reason, right? And if you've had vaccinations and then you've decided that it's something wrong, you're even dumber. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. You know, and I get sucked into these arguments with people all the time, and I don't understand. First of all, I don't understand what the hell my problem is. You're not going to convince other people, but I can still call you stupid. I mean, there's no reason not to do that, right? For the sake of the kids around you, you know, just get them vaccinated, right? But do you want things like polio to come back, or smallpox, or, you know, hepatitis, and hepatitis A and B in large quantities? I mean, those things still are around. Diseases never really leave, right? But I tell you what, if you just stop vaccinating your kids and rely on a quote-unquote herd mentality, you're dooming us. You're dooming humanity, because there may be a strain of one of these things out there that can be affected by this vaccination, you know, schedule, and you're just too stupid to realize it. So those stats I was talking about, influenza, 1918, they estimate like 40 million people perished. So it was something that kicked off a vaccination search. And take what you want from medical knowledge in the 1920s, but they tried, and it built into the system we had today. If Spanish influenza didn't cause that, influenza would probably still have a higher mortality rate, right? Right now, that if you get a vaccination, then the mortality rate's low. It's like 1%, unless there's some other complication, age, immune disorders, those types of things. But it's not caused, you know, nothing bad is caused by that vaccination, right? There's been plenty of studies done. And the other argument you run into are people talking about big pharmaceuticals gaining a lot of money from vaccinations. And anyone in the healthcare field, anyone who understands NCQA, knows for at least physicians, they don't really make any money on this. It's very much a losing venture for them for the most part. And they're part of quality measures, so they have to do them. You know, they have to kind of push that. And it's a good thing. But don't think that they're getting paid. Physicians, yeah, they do get paid well in most respects, but it's not through vaccinations. And big pharma is not a whole ton different. Yeah, they actually, you know, they make billions of dollars. But if you look at their annual statements, you look at some charts, it's usually less than 1% of their total gross revenue. You know, it's really nothing. Even your largest creator, Merck, their MMR is 0.04%. So don't think that they push these things because they want to make a big profit. Do they make money? Yeah. But they got plenty of other ways they make money. And besides, none of this is actually determined what the profit margin is until research and development is completed after a new vaccine comes out, and it takes like 15 years, something like that. It's in, you know, fun part about being in 2019 is you can Google that shit and you know it. You know, you can go to FDA, you can go to the CDC, UNICEF, all of them. They all have information, so you can stop being dumb. So I encourage you to please vaccinate your kids. Please know the dangers of not vaccinating your kids. And please know that the doctor that came up with the report that your children might be subject to autism has since lost his license and been put in jail. Now, I know for a lot of you conspiracy theorists, that doesn't matter. You can keep your tinfoil hats on and I'll still be a naive fuck, however you want to look at me. That's up to you. But you're doing a disservice to the American people by not getting your kids vaccinated. We can't maybe control everybody outside of us, but God damn, you can control the people in here. You know. So please, again, go out. Get your kids vaccinated. Welcome back to the Wet Ink Project. I'm your host, J.D. Kellner. And I just want to step off my soapbox. It's just one of those things that kind of hits a little close to home when you have a newborn, but let's talk about something a little bit more fun. Let's talk about our works in progress. So for those of us who are writers out there, know what I'm talking about. Otherwise known as a whip. No, not a new car, which, by the way, it took me a long time to realize new whip meant car. So call me dumb if you want. But in any case, work in progress. For those of you who maybe don't write as much or kind of on the outside looking in, it's easy to get caught up in one, but a lot of people have multiple. And I think that has something to do with just the way that we think about some of the things that we like to write about. You know, I have a couple work in progress that are so close to being done. And you think, oh, you know, I should just sit down, punch out the words I need to get it done. Boom. There you have it. You know, your manuscript there, your draft manuscript. But it doesn't work that way. You know, you want to be able to get a little bit creative and it's not like, you know, something you're doing for your job or, you know, where you know how things go. You know, when you want to write and finish working on a draft, you have to have that spark. And if you don't have that spark, you're going to just end up rewriting the end of the manuscript anyways. So sometimes, while that may go dormant, a new manuscript pops up. And you may think, I have new ideas. I want to get those down. You know, maybe you jot them down in a notebook, or you have an outline, or hell, you just jump right into it. I've done all of those. So it's one of those things where if I really know what words I want to put to paper, I'll just start pounding the keyboard. But there's a lot of times that I also do a lot of outlining. I have a notebook. Maybe just an idea that will put it down. Excuse me. And add it to the list. So at any given time, I can tell you, at least from my personal experience, I can have three or four whips at most in the works. You know, and for those of us who also do full-time work, full-time parenting, full-time husband type stuff, it's tough to find time. And that's okay. You know, it's not a race. You know, it's getting it down the way you want it to get down. And inevitably, no matter what you do, whenever you get a draft done and you start sharing it with beta readers and you start sharing it with your family and friends, you're going to get feedback. Some good, some bad. Sometimes people just say, you know what, I don't know what you're going for. I've definitely had agents kick back things and say, you know, this just isn't a project for us. It's not something that I think that fits our genre. And then you sit there and you're like, oh, that's exactly what you're looking for, but maybe I didn't write it the way it needed to be written. You know, the gatekeeper world's a little bit different, but they have a lot of experience. And when they come back and tell you that maybe something isn't for them or they're not really sure what you're going for, it's okay to re-explore your manuscript. What's funny is a lot of the people I just talk about is in the writing community, talk about some of the agent rejections they get, and sometimes they're pretty harsh. You know, like, this needs a lot of work, without actually providing any creative constructive feedback. It's, you know, I've been fortunate enough that I haven't actually had that type of rejection. For the most part, it's very much the standard, this just isn't right for us, or good luck. we didn't really look at it, but you know, whatever. But for some people, they get these rejections like saying, this is just really utterly awful. Maybe you should consider quit writing. Or, you know, this really isn't where it needs to be. And that's okay. But it'd be nice for, you know, and I could eventually get that type of criticism. To let you know what you actually need to work on. And I know they don't have time for that. So if they don't have time for that, then don't be so dismissive. It's not a hurt feelings thing, it's not productive. And I think that's a big problem in the writing field, is things aren't very productive. And you get into situations where other people just aren't providing to a narrative. They're just kind of saying, well, I can't really see what you're going for. Okay. Well, what do you mean by that? Well, I just don't understand the plot device. Oh. What about it? Don't you understand? And then you get into that sequence of questioning, and it becomes one person sounds like an asshole and the other person sounds like an asshole. So you just kind of have to play it a little bit more detailed and a little bit granular about what some of the things are that you have issues with. You know, I've had a few beta readers give me feedback, and it's actually okay to disagree with them, believe it or not. You know, especially because most of the time the beta readers that you're picking out are people on the same experience level as you, and they may view it one way, but that's why you get a couple, and then you kind of get you kind of pull a trend analysis of what people are telling you about your writing. Are they telling you the same thing the other beta readers are telling you? Or is it something completely different? You know, ideally for a beta reader, you want to get somebody who's going to give you a little bit of feedback. Not just tell you, hey, this is a good book. It's nice. It's fun. I like it. I could see this being a movie. Well, those are all great, and they make me feel good. Whenever you isolate beta readers, you kind of want a little bit more substance to what they're telling you. And the other side of that is being a little bit nervous to ask for those types of things. I will openly admit I struggle a little bit with criticism, you know, especially creative work. Maybe not my day job so much anymore, but the creative stuff, the things that you pull from your mind, like this is where this has been upstairs, this is what I want to write about, and this is the things that come from my head to this paper. And you have the audacity to tell me that you don't understand it, or you don't like it, or it doesn't work for you. On the surface, that's hard. It's really hard to sit there and think, oh, well, okay, I poured my mind out onto this and you don't like it. It's a fear of rejection that we all get. Some people have it in different atmospheres, job interviews, relationships. Writing is a very bad place where people have fears of rejection. Now, thankfully, self-publishing exists, but you know, you can be rejected there, not by yourself, but by your readers. People writing bad reviews. You know, those are all things that you got to look for. Overcoming that fear of rejection, that anxiety that you get from criticism, those are really tough things to get past. You know, writing is a place that I don't fear rejection, because I've been rejected a lot in one way or another in my life. I've lived it. You know, I'm living a good life. I'm not bitching about anything. I'm just saying that I've had a lot of writings rejected by agents, been turned down for a lot of jobs. You just get used to it. Not numb, but you get used to understanding how you should be feeling. But the criticism, on the other hand, that's kind of where I turned the corner on. You know, going from, oh, cool, I can't wait to hear what you have to say, to, oh, go fuck yourself, you don't know what you're talking about. And that's not a good approach. It's not a good approach at all. You know, a lot of it is a matter of respecting the person that's giving you advice. And if you solicit it. Social media has a nice place of giving implications that you would like advice on things. And people giving it to you and you didn't really ask for it. Now, I'm specifically looking at you, Twitter. But your character limit makes it kind of difficult. So my advice is, don't go snapping at people who give you advice. Right? Sometimes you can feel that passive aggressive, someone's just kind of digging at you. And that's okay. You can deal with it however you feel like dealing with it. But if someone's genuinely trying to give you what they believe is good advice, the best thing you can do is just grin and bear it. And if it really is something that you think is good advice, then use it. And that's hard. I mean, you know, people go to therapy for that shit. And I know that I sit there and I get writing advice and it's like, okay, but I've read your stuff and it's not any good. Who's it not good to? Me. So there's no reason to bite back. It's just kind of, okay, I see what you're saying, but I'm not going to take that approach. Editors are different. You know, you got to work with them. If you get into a point where you're using an editor, or the company has an assigned editor, understand you're on the same team. Understand the goal is everybody wants this to be the best book there was ever written, and they would like to do well on sales and have people enjoy it. Don't look at them as if they're some sort of enemy, because they're not. So that's a completely kind of different realm. But the work in progress I have right now, it's a little bit different. It's different from what I'm used to writing, and it's a bit of a challenge because I don't have enough time, but I write down my thoughts. I try to record dialogue on my phone that I would like to use whenever a thought comes into my head. Now, that's hard because I'm driving a lot And don't text and drive. Don't use your phone to record things and drive. Be safe while you're driving. This has been a message from the Wedding Project. But I'm moving away from science fiction and speculative fiction. And this is kind of going to just be more contemporary work. A lot of inspiration from Neil Gaiman and Good Omens is going into this one. So we'll see how it goes. It's my attempt at a dark humor book. A lot of work still needs to be done. And at some point, I'm sure I'll switch back to my other work in progress. And I can move forward from there and share that too. But so if you have more than one work in progress, it's okay. If you're fishing for criticism and you don't like it, you don't have to like it. Just don't lash out at the people that give it to you. If you're not soliciting advice and someone gives you advice, just remember for the most part, it's probably from an okay place. Okay? And lastly, don't get all upset about rejection. And I know it's, especially from agents, because sometimes you think, well, what do you know? Well, they know enough about this, the market, that maybe your book's not going to work. My book's not going to work. Don't go on Twitter and say how sad you are that someone said that, oh, they don't want it. Well, that was really the agency that I wanted. Yeah, okay, there's a lot of stuff that I would like that I can't get to because one reason or another. So just relax, understand that you can't get rejected forever. And I will be cliche and tell you how many times J.K. Rowling and Stephen King and all those people got rejected, and it was plenty. But they overcome it. And you can too. We'll be right back. All right, the last segment for today's show. I'm going to kind of start doing a Pittsburgh corner thing because I want to talk about things from my neck of the woods for the people who may not know me. And it's pretty easy what I want to start with. It's Pittsburgh Penguins, baby. Playoffs start Wednesday in New York at the Nassau Coliseum. Should be an interesting series. We kind of saw this one coming for, I'd say, a month. You just weren't sure where it was going to start, right? The 2 and the 3 seeds were up for grab right up to the end of the season. It should be a good series. The Islanders are a heavily defensive team, and they take advantage of the opportunities given to them by their opponents. Not completely unlike Ottawa. You know, Ottawa plays a 1-3-1 system, and they didn't have the offensive juggernauts to be able to outscore the Penguins. So you end up playing a buckled down defense and take advantage of the frustration and hopefully mistakes that the Penguins might make. Their goaltending's okay. Thomas Grace or Auburn Lehner. They switch off a lot. And it's not a running back by committee in the NHL. It's one of those things that I don't really think it's going to carry them very far, even if they get past the Penguins. Scoring's okay. Josh Bailey, Anders Lee, Barzal. You know, those are going to be kind of your big guns if there were any. Back end, they're okay. Nicoletti's still a pretty decent player. Filppula will be back as well. I think he's their third line center. But the Penguins, on the other hand, are not limping into the playoffs, but they kind of backed into where they were at. They should be better than they are, right? It drives me nuts sometimes to watch them, and they just have so much talent. But even talent has off days, off games, even hell, off years. And I think in order for them to go anywhere in the playoffs, even if they would hope to get past the Islanders, they kind of have to be a little bit more cohesive. Get those injuries down. Get that power play working. Stop giving up shorthanded goals. And those are just mental errors. They're getting pressured hard at the points because, I mean, most of the time at the points you have Malkin. Sometimes Kessel shifts up to the point. And they get pressured. it's good recognition by their opponents that, hey, there's a weak spot here. We have somebody who's been prone to turnovers in Evgeny Malkin this year. He's making them at the blue line on the power play because it's normally where he's positioned. And he's not a great defender. At least in the, you know, true defenseman sort of standpoint. The Islanders are going to hope to take advantage of that. The Penguins just need to minimize those mistakes. Now, granted, in the playoffs, you tend to see a lot less power plays. Refs sort of put their whistles away, let some stuff go. And while I normally hate that, that might actually be to the benefit of the Penguins in this round. You got Crosby, I got to 100 points. Jake Gensel got to 40 goals. They're going to have to continue to put up numbers if they're going to go anywhere. The Islanders, they started out hot. They stayed pretty warm most of the season. And then everything kind of caught up to them. Right? You know, they were in first place in the Metro for the longest time. Barry Trotz's team is usually a very good defensive team. You know, he didn't have to do that with the Capitals because of the talent he had, but with the Predators, he had very good defense. He's kind of carried that over into New York. But they cooled off. You know, and this is just from an amateur standpoint, but they don't look like real contenders to me. If you look at that roster, there's some really good players, but if you would have asked me before the season, where do you think they'll finish? I would have probably said near the bottom of the Metro. Not as bad as the Devils. Maybe better than the Flyers. And that's kind of where I would have pegged them. You know, fifth, sixth, something like that. But here we are. First round. Penguins haven't had a lot of success historically against the Islanders. I think they're 4 out of 5 in the series. And we all get to hear about David Volek scoring against the Penguins in 93, which... You hear interviews talking with those old Penguins in 93 that they believed they were the best team probably ever assembled on ice. I was pretty young, so I just only see highlights and some of the things they talk about. But, you know, the one thing I can certainly remember is some of the struggles that they've had against the Islanders in the playoffs. But most recently, you know, I believe 2013 maybe, they handled them fairly well. Took Brooks Orpik to score a game-winning goal, but, you know, I thought they did pretty well that way. It should be a physical game, but not as much as it was back then, 2013. Penguins are going to have to figure out how to not become frustrated with that defensive style, usually chipping it deep, beating them to the pucks, putting the body on, cycling it down low, keeping it low. That's kind of where you have to do your dirty work against a strong defensive team. And players like, you know, Crosby and Gensel and McCann, that's going to be a good line. Malkin, Kessel, and Hornquist, or whoever they decide to put on that wing, their down low play is not as strong. It's not to say it's bad. It's just not as strong as Crosby. So they're going to have to figure out how to do it elsewhere. Don't be surprised if you see Sullivan shift up a lot of lines, because that's just what he does. Kind of mixing things up, especially away. The changes make things a little bit difficult because Trotz is going to be able to kind of play lines, kind of figure out exactly who they want to put out in order to combat who the Penguins have out there. Very common, but Sullivan knows how to get around it. I mean, the guy's won, you know, led them to 2 cups. Kind of have to take his word for it. But you know, Penguins, Islanders start Wednesday. I actually will be out of town, so I'm really hoping that I can pick it up on some TV somewhere. If not, I'll be watching it on my tablet in the hotel room. But final prediction, because I don't get to do this show enough, otherwise I would do it after every game. Penguins in 6. I do think that the Islanders are going to frustrate them to the point where they steal a couple of games. But the Penguins will never look like they're in danger of losing the series. So that's my prediction. Penguins in 6. I think they'll begin with a win on Wednesday, split the away, and then then we'll go from there. But again, I want to thank everyone who listened, even after I, you know, went on my tirade about vaccinations earlier today. I'm not apologizing for the people I called dumb, but just know that that last message, I want you to make sure that you get your kids vaccinated. I want you to make sure that you understand that it has implications for all of us. And one final announcement, it's going to be fun. I've been hinting at it a little bit. I've said it before. And I think beginning April 29th, the Wedding Project's going to have a writing contest. More details to come on the website, so pay attention to that. Please follow me at The Wedding Project on Twitter and at Wedding Project on Instagram. Feel free to email me at info@theweddingproject.com, and I will usually respond within one business day if you have any questions. I'm also open to do author interviews, so if you have anything that you would like to push or discuss, I'd be more than happy to get that out there. I know I have a couple in the pipeline, so I want to thank those folks as well. I do want to thank anyone who takes the time to listen to this. I appreciate all of you, and I hope you enjoy. If you're like me and you have nice weather, I hope you enjoy it. Thanks again, everyone. Have a good day.